Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 82 of the MailRight Real Estate Agent Podcast Show. I'm really excited today because our guest is a podcast host in his own right on Super Agent Live. He's also an author, a mentor, and a self-described serial entrepreneur. Please welcome Toby Salgado. Toby, would you tell the folks a little bit about yourself before we jump over and introduce Jonathan, my co-host?
Yeah. I mean, I'll keep it super brief. But yeah, when it comes to podcasting, you said you introduced me as a podcaster in his own right. And I would say, so we have the number one podcast in the world for real estate agents. We started it in 2013. So we were the first guys out there. And of course, you know, in anything that you do, once you see some success or other people see you succeeding, you have people popping up. So anyhow, I'll leave it at that.
All right, Jonathan, why don't we introduce you? And I think we have a sponsor to talk about.
Yes, we're going to talk about our great sponsor, which is Modern Mogul Marketing, and the CEO, Grant Wise, who was a guest of the show. What is Modern Mogul Marketing about? It's about training you as an agent around utilizing Facebook effectively. Grant Wise is one of the leading experts on Facebook marketing, and he has been gracious to continue sponsoring the show. And to learn more, you go to modernmogulmarketing.com, and there's a ton of information about the courses that you can join to learn more about being effective on Facebook. And to introduce myself, I'm the founder of MailRight, a marketing Facebook program that works really quite well with Grant's training. So they're going hand to hand, really.
All right. Well, let's jump into this. So Toby, first of all, thank you for being here. I've discovered your podcast about a year ago and been an avid listener of it ever since, trying to catch up to all your back episodes. You're approaching 300 episodes. That's pretty amazing. Well, I want to dive into first a little bit more of your background because I found your story fascinating. And while I know it, our listeners might not. And just to set that up, you made your first million in real estate, but you did that climbing out of a hole of debt. Can you talk on that a little? Speak on how you did that?
Yeah, for sure. But I think to really tell that story, I think you got to go back farther, right?
Because let's do it.
So, you know, and by the way, again, with the podcast, right, we are approaching 300. We could have probably been at like 600. When we started doing three episodes a week, and we rolled it back to two, and now we do one episode a week. And it's amazing. Right. It is amazing. I thought that would hurt our growth. It hasn't. Like, it's just crazy. People go, oh, dude, I dig that. And they just consume it. So whatever. So my story is this, right? So when, and I bring the podcast up because to segue into my story, many, many times when I bring somebody on and I'll say, hey, tell me a little bit about yourself. And just 90% of the time, a huge percentage of the time, people start with, well, I fell into real estate. And it's fun. I hear that story all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that is an interesting statement because in reality, what they're missing is the fact that they're entrepreneurs. So can you really say I fell into entrepreneurship? Maybe, maybe not. I can tell you for me, I did fall into entrepreneurship. I think as a kid, right, I was always a hustler. But here's how I fell into entrepreneurship. And it was through the lens of understanding, and this happened at 9 years old, right? I understood in a snap that I didn't have to trade hours for dollars, okay? It was an amazing realization, and that one realization changed the trajectory of my whole life. And this is what happened. So I'm 9 years old, I'm sitting on my dad's pot, right? I'm taking a dump. And there was a magazine that he subscribed to. It was Mother Earth News. Now, 9 years old, I'm not into Mother Earth News, but it's the only thing I could read. So I picked it up, flipping through it, I see this huge one full-page ad for toilet bowl cleaners. And, like, you know, copywriting is so important with stuff. And the copy on this ad was amazing because 30-something plus years later, I still remember it. But in bold red, it said, guaranteed or double your money back. I'm like, double my money back, right? So the only, I was like, holy crap. And the more you bought, the cheaper they were. So I get all excited. I'm like, it was like, for whatever reason, well, double your, if you're not happy, right? Well, double your. So I walked out into, you know, this is in the morning before school. I go, look, mom, dad. I'm like, dude, I'm going to double my money. You know, I'm going to buy all these. I'm going to return them. I didn't like them. Recess for any reason. So my parents were like, yeah, it doesn't really work like that. So instead of being, so I went to school and I wanted, I kept my brain kept going, how can I take their guarantee and use it? And I never really quite figured it out, I said, you know what? I was so moved by that, that I'm like, everybody would be, I'm like, everybody will want to buy it. So I went back home. I had like $300 and I was like, okay, I can get them down to, I don't know, $42 a case, whatever. And this turned out to be my first capital raise. So I had $300. I ended up raising another $800, right, from some from my, got some from my uncle, some from my parents, and I bought these toilet bowl cleaners. And it's so easy to get excited about something, right? Especially in real estate, everybody has that shiny ring syndrome. So easy to get excited about something. But then when it comes to execution, that's when it gets hard. So whatever, I was excited. I send my order in. I get them. I had boxes and boxes of toilet bowl cleaners in my room. I still kind of remember the smell. But I literally got them, put them in a bag, put it and walked to my neighbor down the street. And I'm like, I sold them. And like the first day, right, this is back in the 70s. I mowed a lawn for like $2. And I was happy to get $2 or $4 to mow a lawn. I literally, at the end of like a 2-hour shift, I had like $100 in my pocket. Holy smokes, right? So anyhow, I ended up selling them all out, and that $300 investment, I ended up making, like netting, like a little over $1,000. $1,000, and I did this like in 30 days or less. So $1,000 with a 9-year-old, you're like, I will never mow a lawn. I grew up in Fresno. You know how hot it is in Fresno in the summertime? Like 110 degrees. So I'm like, why would I ever mow a lawn in blistering heat when I can just go sell something? So I think two things that – there are a lot of things kind of clicked, right? Number one, sales is everything. Number two, I don't have to trade, you know, hours for dollars anymore. And number three, I'm like, you know, and I didn't, you know, in the 70s, nobody talked about that word entrepreneurship, right? What is that? Did I start my own business? I don't know what I just did. All I know is that, so that's where I got my start, you know, and I've done everything from, you know, in my real career, you know, I've started venture capital backed companies, right? Tech companies. I've done finance companies. I've done low-tech companies. That's where I made most of the vast majority of the money, in a low-tech company. And then I'm playing right now with an ad agency. So right. I've done a bunch of stuff, right? Most of them have succeeded. I've done, I think, 6 startups. 4 have all been multi-million dollar. 1 kicked out like 8 figures in production. 2 have been fails. You know, you don't always win.
Right.
But to answer your question, you can feel free, Thomas, to cut me off at any point. But to quickly answer your question is, I was coming out of the valley, Silicon Valley. This is, you know, in the late 90s, everybody was making millions doing internet startups. So I had some friends coming out of Stanford. We threw together a business plan. We raised $7 million. We launched this thing, and that was my first failure. It didn't work. And so around 2000, the internet was busted up, right? Nobody believed in the internet anymore. It's all a scam, whatever. So I left the valley, I got engaged up there, came back to San Diego, bought a house, right? Started to play house, 2001. And the debt thing, like I was making a ton of money, number one in the valley. And when I bought the house and I got married, right, we started playing house. Like, well, let's fix it up. I didn't think I needed to work for a while.
Right.
And it was at the time I had a crazy resume. In the valley, I could throw my resume out and literally within a week, I had like 5 job offers. And I was like, I did that in the valley. And I'm like, I'm bringing all that back to sleepy town San Diego. I'm like, I'm like the only guy. I'm gonna have offers coming at me left and right. Now I probably would have. However, literally when we started to run out of money, because my bank account starts to go like this, our debt starts to go like this, 2001, 9/11 happens.
Right.
The world changed.
Right.
And so that's when I realized, like, I'm not going to get a job anymore, right? Which is fine, right? Because I won't go into my background in terms of entrepreneur versus job. But that's when an opportunity came up. I jumped on it and literally went from $26,000 in debt. And in 2 years, I had $1 million in my bank. Not $1 million net worth saying, oh, my house appreciated in the right. Golden days of 2004. I'm talking 7 figures in my bank.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I didn't know you were spending any time up in the Bay Area. I'm originally from there too.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, now we talked about your podcast, and I do want to talk about that for a minute because, you know, obviously it's Super Agents Live. So you talk to super agents. Not any agent is coming on and being interviewed by you. So when you look back over 280 shows, what's a common denominator that not only gets them on your show, but then what you hear from them that makes them stand out to you? Like what is that factor?
Yeah, it's super simple. So in turn, it's funny. When we launched the show, we said, oh, you have to do at least $30 million in production. And that quickly ramped up to like $100 million. Yeah. And it was weird. Here's the weird thing. Like, I would find somebody, I'm like, okay, they're on my radar. We get them on the show, and I would just get into it. And right. one day, I just asked. I said, hey, before we start recording, I said, listen, before we record, can you give me a sense of your team size and your production? And the first girl I remember was Ray Chantel, and she goes, oh, we have a team of 42, and we did 900 deals last year. I was like, holy, what? I was like, okay, that's cool. So we do the episode, and I batch my episode. So I just record on Mondays, so those Mondays can sometimes be just back to back to back to back.
Gotcha.
So I'm like, that's interesting. I didn't know, right? I had no idea exactly who I was talking to. I just knew this girl was a top producer. The next guy, I said, can you give me a sense of your team size and production? He's like, yeah, we have a team of 22 and we did 1,000 deals last year. I'm like, holy, I didn't know for the first almost maybe 100 episodes that I was having all these super, super rock stars. Like, these are the unicorns. These are the top 0.25%. I didn't know. I just knew that they fit into our box early on.
Right.
So today it's not like that. Today I don't reach, it's weird, for probably last year, I don't reach out to interview anybody. Now I just have, it's just my inbox is full of, hey, like this is who I am. And, you know, they have booking agents and everything else. Because, you know, these real, real top producing agents, you don't have to be on $1 million listing, but these, you know, they get media requests all the time. So they literally at some point, probably when you're at like 600 or 700 deals, like they end up getting an agent, which is weird. I remember this girl, the first time I don't know, Jewel something, I was like, I reached out to her. She's like, oh, I'll have my agent call you. And then it was like, oh, hey, she's not doing this media stuff. And it was amazing to me. These are just real estate people,
right?
But they were media people. So anyhow, so here's the deal. There's one, you know, we can talk about marketing because there are marketing things that are thematically similar with all of them, but I think it really starts with a mindset. And every single one of these people, right? When I bring somebody on and they're doing 600 or 700 deals, those people don't say, "Oh, I just fell into real estate." Rarely do they say that, right? Those people set out deliberately on day one to build a business. Very different than most, you know, how agents just try on real estate today and right. see this.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Because I mean, this is such a, I think what you're saying about people falling into real estate, they fall into it from a W-2 job and they continue to treat it like a job. So yeah. I think you've touched on it. So you've interviewed some pretty amazing people, both trainers and realtors. What have been some of the aha moments you've had that you weren't expecting to get out of being a host of this podcast that you've applied yourself, like something that a guest has turned you on to?
That's an interesting question. And I'm going to answer your question honestly. I don't know what kind of listenership you have, but I think a lot of people will not like this answer. Okay. So the aha is that most of these people pulling down big numbers are not very smart. They're not sophisticated. Sometimes I'm just going, oh my God, how in the world you're making you're netting a million, you're not GCI $1 million, you're netting $1 million. Right. And this is what you know, which is almost nothing. So it's just amazing. What the aha is for this industry is, it's amazing how unsophisticated, old, stodgy, and slow this industry is. This industry has made more people wealthy than any other industry, right? As a whole.
Right.
And it moves slow. It acts old. it's amazingly unsophisticated.
So, but now I get what you're saying, and I actually don't take offense to that because I agree with you to some degree, and I also think the point you're making is that these, to use your word, unsophisticated people must have something in place that supersedes their abilities, like systems or whatever that may be. I mean, are you seeing that they have something that overrides their limitations that takes them to this level?
No, right. So, okay. Let me rephrase my answer.
Okay.
So the deal is this: you have, you know, there's in any industry, right? You have the 80-20 rule, right? You have the gorilla, you know, dominating 80% of the market, and it goes down to the chimps, right? And they're for scraps. So this industry in every single market, whether it's Chicago, San Diego, it's very much like that. So the people at the top have a modicum of sophistication across the board, a modicum of sophistication when it comes to managerial skills, a modicum of sophistication when it comes to hiring, managing, training, marketing. But with that, this level of sophistication, they're able to dominate 80% of the market. So right. It is the vast majority of people are just scrambling in the dark, throwing rocks, you know, seeing what sticks. And if you just have a plan that is reasonable when it comes to marketing, managing, hiring, then you'll win. And it's, you know, that's it.
All right. Hey, Jonathan, do you want to jump in here? I don't want to hog all the talk time.
No, I totally agree with what Toby's saying. That's my observation to some extent. It's quite surprising because, you know, like you've got to build up a database, you know, the 101 of real estate. Even the fundamentals, I come across a lot of agents that are not doing the fundamentals. It really depends how long they've been in the industry. If they built a reservoir of referrals by their activities in the community, that works out for them. But anybody new now, I think they're going to really struggle. Would you agree with that, Toby?
So here's what I would strongly agree with, right? The fundamentals, right? And I let me tell you how fundamentally unsophisticated, I keep using that word, people are, right? You and I and everybody on this call knows that our most important, most valuable spoke in our business is our database, especially when it comes to realtors, right? Because this is a relationship business.
Right.
Our database. I've looked at literally, and I know you have, Jonathan, and I'm not sure about you, Thomas, but you know, I've looked at hundreds, maybe thousands of different people's websites, and these are top producers, and I literally have seen one. So I give away my, I build my database. Every day I'll get between 20 to 100 new registrations into my database. People opt in to get my book, and there's a few different ways. I mean, I gate my site as well. But why, I literally have seen one person saying, hey, trade me your email address for my book on how to sell for the most money in 30 days, or, you know, 7 easy ways to increase curb appeal, whatever, right? So when fundamentally, that should be the first place that you start, building your list, getting more people in your funnel so that you can either develop them as a customer, whatever. They're not doing that. So if you are not deliberately doing something that fundamental, you're doing everything else wrong, right? So you do, I don't know what, you know, you do something with Facebook, your promoter, your sponsor also does something. We do too, right? You know, we buy ads. We know how to do it, right? We know the demo that we target. We know the messaging that works. So if you are not sophisticated enough, I don't want to use that word anymore, but to build your database, what else are you doing wrong, right?
Right.
And let me tell you how wrong this industry is. Why in 2017, why do people still plaster their face on their business cards?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, my face hasn't sold a house.
No.
Well, you know, okay, so you touch on something then that brings up another question for me. So are super agents buying leads, earning leads, or capturing leads?
All the above. All the above.
All the above.
You cannot get to 400 deals for example, like with radio, for example, right? We have a radio ad agency. We put people on radio and television. I've only seen two people, well, really only one guy. I've only seen one guy get to, just about get to 400 deals without radio. So in order to get to that scale, you have to have a good mix of online leads, offline leads, free leads, paid leads. So you have to have a good bucket. So you have to buy some, you have to, you know, earn some. So yeah, you can't get to scale without having a good mix.
Okay. And then on the buying part, because, you know, we've all heard the companies that let people down. I mean, what have you come across or what have your guests shared with you that's successful for them in buying leads?
It's amazing. That's a hard, I can't answer that question because it's so market by market. It's amazing. You know, most right now in 2017, 2016, most markets, Zillow doesn't work. And everywhere I go, my first thing out of my mouth is, what, spending money on Zillow? Drop it. Stop doing it. But, you know, we have found, literally the last few weeks, we found a few markets where people are like, oh, dude, that's my biggest source of deals. And I really question them to make sure they understand what they're saying. Yeah. So it's really market by market, right?
Okay.
At the end of the day, whether it's not about buying leads, it's not about the raw number of leads you get, right? There's lead volume. There's lead quality, right? It all comes down to, you know, how well you can convert them. You can go buy 1,000 crappy leads a month and you're just gonna be turning through a bunch of garbage and never gonna convert anything. So I think no matter where you get leads or how you get them, I think everybody needs to have a process for quickly categorizing them in terms of quality, and then really have a hook, a USP so that you can convert them. Because you don't want to buy a lead and develop it for 6 to 18 months. Because if you think about the, you know, time value of money, like, ugh, that's, you know, that's a terrible prospect. You know, you buy a lead and you're developing it, and then all it takes, honestly, so you go out and buy a lead, whatever that cost per acquisition is, $2, $20, $200, whatever. I can tell you that if that person's in the market and they run across me and we meet at Pottery Barn, like, I'm going to take that deal from you.
Right. So, okay, well then on that, like, what do you have a prescribed amount of weeks or months that somebody incubates a lead before they dump it?
So no, I mean, it's not, there's, again, trying to answer that question. It's a big giant question, and it really depends on what your business looks like, what your team size looks like, you know?
Right.
I can tell you that, you know, if you are, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I would say never purge a lead. They just go into a different system, a different bucket.
Okay.
You know, everybody should right now take their database of leads and, number one, segment them. Segment buyers and sellers.
Right.
So you're, the messaging you're going to communicate, that's two different messages.
Right.
So, and then you should segment them by time frame, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, 6 months plus, because the frequency with which you'll talk to a 30-day target or prospect is way different than somebody that's going to potentially convert in 8 months.
Right. So, great point.
But again, this goes back to something you touched on earlier, Thomas, is systems. You need to have a system. You can't one-off this crap. You need to segment it, do it once, takes a lot of work, create your drip campaigns or whatever, your follow-up, and then put it into place. You like and do everything. Here's another thing with top producers is that the first question, money is a completely renewable resource. I can spend all my money and I can go get a whole bunch more tomorrow. Time is not. And so many people will optimize to save their money and blow out a bunch of time when they're thinking so short term. So anyhow, the question that all these top producers first ask is, one, can I, you know, do I have to do that, or can I delegate that? Or does it even need to be done at all? Is it just a perceived thing that I should do this thing, whatever it is?
Right.
So do I have to do it, number one? You know, can I automate it, number two? Mm-hmm. And then if I can't automate it and a human being needs to do it, can I delegate it, right? You need to be freeing up your time for what CEOs do. You need, you know, we all have the same amount of time as Mark Cuban, Zuckerberg, right? Why? Why are people struggling with limited income? They hate where they live. They can't vacation where they dream. I really wish I could go on that, hire a yacht and sail the Grecian islands. You can. I went off on a rant, man.
No. it was a great rant, actually.
It was.
We're going to go for our break now, folks, and we're coming back and we're going to learn some more from Toby. It's been a fascinating interview so far. We'll be back in a minute, folks.
Do you want quality leads from homeowners and buyers right in your own neighborhood? Then you need MailRite. It is a powerful but easy-to-use online marketing system that uses Facebook to generate real estate leads at a fraction of the cost you'd pay from our competition. We stand behind our work with a no-question-asked 30-day money-back guarantee. So don't delay. Get started today. Go to mail-write.com.
We're coming back, folks. Fantastic interview here with Toby. It's been broad, but I've really enjoyed it. Off you go, Thomas. I'll see your next question.
Well, I want to finish that thought because I did appreciate your rant because you're right. When you talk about can a human being do it, then are we talking about scripts at this point so that you can delegate it to somebody so you don't, as a CEO, have to spend time calling these leads? You can script it out?
Yeah, well, right. So let's say that you have, let's say you've done your hard work, you're segmenting your database, you have a group that you think they've indicated they want to do something in the next 30 days, right? So if you are, again, so there's a real CEO, right, hires people and all they do is make decisions. They're not doing this all this other crap. They hire a designer, right, and they're just making decisions. Now, you have to be very sophisticated. Again, there goes that word. I rarely use that word, by the way. But there's very few companies where in real estate that there's a real CEO. So most of the time, they're still going on listing presentations, or they're saying they're making some kind of decision. This lead goes to Jimmy. This one goes to Julie. But when it comes to something high touch, that's all about really getting somebody into an appointment, right? Because
right.
Our job trying to get deals on the board, right? It's all about appointments. You shouldn't make that call yourself to try to get an appointment with Mrs. Smith. That's really wasting your time. In reality, the more that you can separate yourself from the minutia, the higher likelihood that you can convert that person. Because the perception about who you are, what your company looks like, completely changes, right? When you knock on my door and say, oh, hey, listen, are you thinking about buying and selling? And all of a sudden, then you're doing the listing. Like, you're just like, you know what I mean? Like, you're this mechanic guy, you know, work.
It'd be like a surgeon answering his own phone at the office.
Exactly right. And I'll tell you, I try to put as much separation between me and my prospects as possible. I even make them do work. I even make them, you know, I won't talk to anybody until somebody else, they get on my calendar. Number two, somebody else pre-qualifies them. And then I get on and go, look, I don't know if you're a good fit, but let's spend a few minutes. And that, me setting myself up in that regard, like people are like, hold on. Like, I know for a fact Toby's in charge. And that matters. When I go, okay, write me a check. I've set myself up in a way and I've done it. It's so funny, right? I'm not, you know, NLP or whatever, but it's so funny. Just even the words that we use, right? And I'll give you an example of this, is with radio, we have one big competitor. I had a bunch of sales calls this one week. This is a year or so ago. And the person asked me, they said, do you know who XYZ company is? And my response was, yes, we compete with them. Now I said, yes, we compete with them. And all of a sudden, what I did was their mindset was, okay, but are you as good as them? Are you, like, how do you rank up to them? Now, literally 20 minutes, that same day, 20 minutes in the future, I had another call. I got that same question. And I said, yes, they compete with us.
Yeah.
Done. And now I've never had people then say, are you as good or whatever? So again, optics matter. But again, I think we as smart salespeople need to think about, okay, how do we position ourselves with the most power in the situation? And again, I'm saying the same words, I'm just reorganizing them. Yes, yeah. We compete with them. No, yes, they compete with us. It's whatever. You get my point.
Yeah, that was a great nugget right there. I love it. Choice of words can make or break a deal. I've learned that the hard way. I want to divert over to radio for a minute because you do broker. Is that the right word? Advertising on radio, or how would you describe what you do?
Yeah, so we're an agency.
Okay, an agency.
We are an agency. We're just like, you know, you've heard of CAA. You know, just like an actor has an agent.
Right.
We're an agent for radio and television.
Okay. So now, I mean, the perception of radio, you know, with satellite radio and podcasts and all that stuff, it seems like it's like an older fashioned media. So how do you keep that relevant and sell it?
Well, so you're right. And it is. But the deal is this. This goes back to I guess we haven't talked about demo. This is all about demographics.
Okay.
So I can tell you the demo that we target, and when you think of farming, right? You can farm a geography,
right?
Or you can farm a demographic, right? So with radio, we're farming a demographic, but you know our demo is men 35 to 54. So I can tell you that those men in their 50s. That either want to scale up to their dream house or scale down, right? They're used to, in the old days, picking up a Yellow Pages. They're used to like looking at and reading the newspaper. So at the end of the day, right? So radio is 100% relevant. 100% relevant because it's real time. In a lot of ways, it's real time. Podcasts are not, for example. So, you know, we love, in terms of format, you know, if you are a kid of the 80s and you love Def Leppard, maybe you listen to it on Pandora, but for the most part, when you're driving into work, you're going to listen to that classic hit station, right? If you are a news junkie, everybody right now is a news junkie, right? I mean, Trump is an amazing guy in terms of you know, you're going to tune in to, especially if you have some wealth, you're going to tune in to Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, and Rush. And you know what? You want to hear it real time. You want to hear Rush comment right now on what Trump did yesterday. And you're going to, as a 50-year-old man, right, because that's who we target, your preferred digestion source will be radio. It's not reading. It's not necessarily podcasts.
Okay. So, and then are you basically helping agents get commercials on, or are these more like interviews, or I mean, what are you doing for them?
So the way we build a campaign is we do endorsements, we buy 60s, and there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. So okay. We just build a campaign. We go, hey, what, you know, let's take a look at the market. We research the market. For our demo, we want to know where that audience is. We'll research the market and rank the stations for income. We'll research the market and rank we look at Nielsen ratings, the same thing that that everybody, right? I don't care if you're BMW, Porsche, or Warner Brothers, we have that same data. So we know everything about the market, and then we get in there and again, build a campaign. What day part, who are we going to have endorse our guy, where our spot is going to land in the commercial island. Like, everything is up for grabs. Everything's up for grabs. Okay. And we go, put this here, do this, this long, here's the messaging.
So you've got one of the biggest podcasts going out there. You're on radio. So I mean, I look to you as someone that is very knowledgeable in the marketing world. I want to ask you, for our listeners, what is the difference and where should an agent start between advertising, marketing, and branding?
That's a good question. That's a great question. Okay. So let's break those down. Let's make sure everybody understands what that is. So branding, I don't believe in. There's a place and time for branding, but branding is impressions, right? Branding, in a lot of ways, is that billboard or that bus bench, right? I'm driving by it, I get stopped at the stupid stoplight, and I see Toby Salgado Real Estate. That's branding. Those are impressions. Now, impressions don't convert. Maybe, you know, if I'm having my coffee and me and my wife, or you know, we just found out we're pregnant, she's like, let's buy another house. And I'm like, that's exciting, so exciting. You know, I can get that garage I always wanted. I drive up to the stoplight. And I see Toby Salgado's bus bench. And I've seen it 80,000 times. I'm like, I'm going to call that dude, right? So that's impressions and branding. You got to be careful about the dollars. That's so untrackable, right? What's the ROI in that? I don't know. Maybe someone mentioned that. That's tough. So we don't buy anything for impressions. Now, here's the deal when it comes to marketing and advertising. This is really important because a lot of people use those two terms synonymously. Right. They are very different things, man. Right. Now, here's how we see it. And you may see it similar but different. But marketing, BMW does a fantastic job with marketing. Most of their stuff actually is marketing because it's German engineering, you know, luxury, feel the road, whatever. And like the imagery, whether it's a print ad or a commercial, like you see and feel that engagement, you know, going around.
It's emotional.
It's emotional, right? And that's how people buy on emotion. So that's it. BMW does that, you know, and many times that's aspirational. Don't you deserve the best, right? You work hard. So I see it and I put myself there. And then it's up to me to go, okay, there's no call to action. There's no offer. I'm just going to put myself as a consumer in that. And then I'm going to reach out to them, right? So in a lot of ways, that positioning, they've just positioned themselves way up here. And dude, like by the time I walk to that BMW dealership, like I'm done. I want to feel that way because I feel crappy at home. My wife's always yelling at me. I hate my job. My kids don't listen to me. I deserve that 7 seconds, right? So that's marketing. That's marketing. Now, advertising is that same thing, but you are making an offer. Road, luxury engineering, get yours for $349, right? You just made me an offer. Now I'm like, okay, call to action. But that's the difference between advertising and marketing. And again, so the top thing that people should be doing is advertising. Here's my message. Here's my offer. Come and get it. Then the second thing is going to be marketing. Now, if you get into a market, and so on radio, our offer is some version of a guaranteed sale, right? Need to sell your house, you need to call Toby. Here's why. He's the only agent that will guarantee to sell your house at your price, or he'll pay you $5,000. What? So that's a crazy offer, right? So if I'm in the market, I'm gonna pick up the phone and call Toby. Now, if I'm in that market with that message on a station for a period of time, depending on the size of the market, depending on the size of the station, I can then revert back to or go into marketing, right? I stop making the offer. I might reference a guarantee, but I don't. And so you can, again, two different things, but you use them in very specific circumstances.
Okay. So in other words, the advertising's the house and the marketing's the furniture. You got to have one before the other, or do they have to be, does one come before the other? Can you do them in parallel?
You can do them in parallel, but it's all about, we do all these things to get some sort of a return.
Right. Okay.
So if you want an actual return, like you need to reach in, you need to start, the first thing you do is start advertising.
Right.
Who you are, right? And it's the quickest way, right? And so this brings up a different point, right? When we enter a market, target a farm, whatever, the first step before anybody's going to do business with us, the first step is indoctrination. I need to indoctrinate every person in that market or that farm. And indoctrination is this. You need to know who I am, what I do, my mission, and then why that's my mission. And once you understand that, then all of a sudden, right, we can ascend them up the chain. So the quickest way to indoctrinate a group of people is with advertising. Hey, my name's Toby Salgado. I'll sell your house at your price or I'll pay you. And then we get into how I can do it and social proof. So the first thing people should be deploying their capital is advertising.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I mean, see, that makes sense to me. Cause we get inundated with things that are vanity ads, you know, put you on the grocery cart, put you on the bus bench, put you on some product. But I mean, if you don't have an ad out there with a call to action driving in business, what's the point of having that first? And that's a money sucker. Some of those things are high dollar value.
I'll give everybody a rule of thumb here, because 100%, right? 100%, there's a bunch of vanity crap going on out there. So when we think of too many times as a entrepreneur, a realtor, whatever, everybody's talking to us about channels, right? Radio's a channel, TV's a channel, that shopping cart, that's a channel, that bus bits, that's a channel. So everybody's talking about channels. What channels works, what channels works. But that's only part of the process. Now, for real marketers, there's the rule that we think of is 40, 40, 20. Now, 40% is the channel, right? In terms of your response, 40% is your channel, bus bench versus radio. The next 40% is your offer. What's your offer? Because you can't come out and go, hey, call Toby, he's the best. He's a super nice guy, right? Like, he'll take care of you. That's going to move the needle, right? You have to have an offer. And then the last 20, right, 40, 40, 20, the last 20 is your creative, all your creative, all your copy. You know, and words matter. Just like that thing earlier,
right?
We compete against them, they compete against us. Like, words matter. So that copy.
That's great advice. I know we're coming up on the end of our time here, and I want to hit you with a few rapid-fire questions. Who's on your bucket list that you haven't interviewed yet that you'd like to interview?
You know, I'm moving into – I move bucket list. I mean, I would love to have Tony – come on, Robbins. I'd love to get him. I think I missed my window. I think I could have got him right after he wrote his last book, Money. I think that was my opportunity, and I missed it. But you know, I'm reaching out more to I'm moving into two sort of categories. So one is going to be super tactical authors. So Charles Duhigg, The Power of Habits, on my list right now. Maybe Robert Kiyosaki, although he's a little bit diluted. So I'm moving into authors to get super tactical. And then I truly believe that mindset is so important. So, you know, I want to start to get people with real stories. You know, oddly enough, and this is, it's not going to be around the world of real estate and potentially in business, but you know, who I would love to have is Andre Agassi.
Yeah. He'd be a great one. I mean, there's so much that is transferable to sales and real estate that doesn't have to be sourced from a real estate.
People make that mistake and go, oh, it's real estate. Like, it's tech or it's software. It's not, you know, we're in the world of retail. That's it.
Right.
Just happens to be houses.
Right.
So we should be thinking, you know, as a retail business, we should look at what those big retailers do. What Zales do and when do they do it, right? And why? What are they doing? What's that copy look like? You know, so we should think like retailers instead of realtors.
I agree with you. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received from one of your guests?
That's a good question. I don't know that I've gotten, you know, it's funny that you say that, right? Because advice, I recently did an episode on buying signals. And what I found is that, you know, if I'm pitching someone, whether it's private equity or venture capital, if I'm pitching someone, when I start to get people giving me encouragement or giving me advice, while some of us may go, they're engaging, they're interested, in reality, that's a negative buying signal. Hey, attaboy, Thomas. You know what? Maybe this is how you can improve your pitch, move, improve. Like, that's not a buying signal. What I want is people to push back. No, and say, hey, no, Toby, I disagree. Tell me how. They want me to convince them. I know they're now interested. You know, if you watch Shark Tank, right? Yeah. You know, when Mr. Wonderful starts giving you advice, you're dead.
Yeah.
You want Cuban, you know, pushing back. What's your distribution? What's your manufacturing, right? So. Right.
Okay. I'm going to throw your own question back at you. You got 25 bucks and you want to refer a good book to an agent or a salesperson. What's the book you recommend?
Man. Yeah, that's a good question for sure. I'm going to make a statement and then I'm going to go against the statement. The most important thing that every single person listening can get better at is copywriting. If you know how to write copy, because true copywriting is you have an avatar in your head. Who is this 42-year-old tech entrepreneur living in downtown San Diego? What words will move that person? So if you can get better at copywriting, the mere fact of envisioning what words you want to use to attract that person, it opens up the world. I see copy everywhere. Yeah. So there's a lot of great books. Most people just have never really thought about copywriting that way. So I'm not going to give you a copywriting book, but I will tell you that's where you should spend your time and money. Become a better copywriter. And it's almost like meditation. When you meditate, like so many other tangential things will improve. If you learn how to write good copy, so many tangential things will improve. Here's for the semi-sophisticated entrepreneur real estate agent, the book that covers a ton of topics, and it's fantastic, is Chet Holmes, The Ultimate Selling Machine. Chet Holmes, The Ultimate Selling, get that book.
Awesome. Awesome. Good advice. You know, it's funny you mentioned the copywriting. That's such a great point. I just had this conversation with a client of mine over the weekend who's a lawyer, and he rewrote some of the things that I wrote in an offer and his cover letter, and it just massively improved it. And I had asked him, I said, you know, where did you learn to write like that? You're a lawyer. And he goes, my professor gave me a book called Plain English for Attorneys. And it really took effect on him. So you're right. It's how do you reach that target audience? But you just made the great point of who is that audience you're trying to reach first and foremost.
Right. But 100%. And here's the thing with copywriting is that what we're trying to do, we're trying to emotionally manipulate someone, right?
Right.
You mentioned earlier, people buy on emotion. They don't buy on logic.
Right.
Even though they think they do, they buy on emotion. So look, here's the two books. Look, I'll pick up the books that are on my desk. I don't know if you can see it. So yeah. This is Influence.
Yep.
Psychology of Persuasion, right?
Yep.
This is fascinating. Here's another one. The Advertising Solution, right? This right. Talks about a lot of that stuff. And the last one on my desk is this is a great one that everybody should. This is called Great Leads. And if people that don't know what copywriting is, that is just a book of ads that you can see. And then they break down the psychology of why these ads work. So anyhow.
That's awesome, man. Well, I tell you what, I know we're heading into wrap up. I want to give you a couple seconds here you've got a summit coming up, and you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah. So it's surprising that you know that. So we're doing the Get Listings Summit. You can getlistingsummit.com. Everybody can get a free ticket. You know, we're having 35. You know, I have published on my site. I have 280 or so episodes live. However, I've done about 400. They're just sitting around on flash disk.
Wow.
So we sat down, me and a guy and Andre Polstein, we sat down and said, you know, let's kind of categorize mindset versus team building, right? Because my show is just a big, like, you never know what you're going to get, right?
Right.
So I just said, hey, what are the top minds around this? What are the top minds around this? And we went out and got them. So we got, you know, 35 plus, well, we have 45 people, which is a crazy summit, right? Where do you, and every single one of these people could keynote, right? And you're like, who's going to keynote the thing? It's a free ticket. All the episodes are up for a couple days. If you want to buy the videos of them and go back and look at them, it's like $97, right? For less than $100, you get 35 hours of training. Like, come on.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Well, like I said, I'm a fan of your show, so I actually do listen to it. Jonathan, I've dominated the time here. Do you want to add anything before we wrap things up?
No, it's just been a fascinating. I agree. It's also really understanding what your audience are. You know, if you're in a certain area, I think a lot of agents also fear about really focusing on a particular target audience.
Right. They're afraid of the niche.
Yeah. And they want to market to all people, all ages, all groups.
Yeah.
And then that's the road to becoming a total commodity. The more actually, if your area can sustain your specialization, the more the better, because it has so many different benefits. Would you agree with that, Toby?
100%, man. If you try to talk to everybody, you're talking to nobody.
Right.
And look, nobody. That is such stupid thinking. You know, that whoever thinks that way is never going to make it in a big way. And here's why, right? Our biggest asset. I have a bunch of houses, but my most expensive thing that I've ever bought is my house, where I live right here.
Right.
So if I'm going to take the thing that really matters to me, and give it to this person or this person or this person to sell it. You know, let me say it this way. If you have a mole on your face and you're like, that could be cancerous, I'm not going to go to my dumb general doctor, right? I'm going to go to, I'm here in San Diego. I'm going to spend as much money going to the La Jolla dermatologist, who that's all she does is look at these kind of moles, right? I want a superstar specialist. I'm not going to take my Porsche to a Volkswagen mechanic. That dude can fix it. I know, I'm sure he can fix it, but I want to take it to the Porsche guy. I don't want to take it to the dealer. I want to take it to the guy that works on race cars, right? So you have to realize, people know that, people intuitively know that when they think of something, an asset, something like a Porsche or a Mercedes or a Lamborghini, you know, something like, oh, of course you're going to take it to that person who specializes. But if I have $1 million house or a $300,000 house, that's the most important thing to me, and I believe that's the key to my retirement, don't you want a specialist? Of course you do. So, and here's the mistake. The mistake is this. I talk to people all the time about this. I'm like, dude, you know what? If you're in Orlando, focus on waterfront properties, right? Right. If you're in Tahoe, you know, focus on, your whole brand could be, I focus on waterfront houses with docks.
Right.
But that's your thing. But if you come out and you tell the world, I focus on waterfront houses with docks, and somebody comes to you and they have a condo that's slopeside, what are you going to do? You're not going to take it? Of course you're going to take it. Right. You're going to take every deal. This is all about presenting to the market who you are and what you do. So, yes, sorry.
Well said. No, I love your passion, man. That's why we wanted you on. Man, you're a great host, but you're also a great guest, and we appreciate you being here. Toby, how can people get in touch with you?
You know, everybody, just if you are not familiar with the show, just go to superagentslive.com and check it out. I encourage everybody. You know, I try to, like, my email box is insane, yeah. But so I won't give you my email address. But even, you know, if you want to talk to me or ask me questions, I'm pretty open. I try to respond to everybody.
Yeah, and I can attest to that because you've responded to me in the past. Thank you again for being on our show today, Toby. We really appreciate it, and I have a lot of respect for Super Agents Live, too. Jonathan, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, go to the Mail Right Twitter. I do reply when people ask questions on that. Or you could email me, and I won't get back to you straight away, but if it's obviously from a real person with a real question or inquiry, I do answer all those personally, and that's at jonathan@mail-right.com.
And I'm Thomas J. Nelson. I'm a San Diego residential realtor. You can find me on thomasjnelsonrealtor.com or on Facebook, and I'm never too busy for your San Diego referrals. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Toby, thanks for, you gave us so much content. People should listen to this multiple times because I took some notes here, and I know I'm going to hear it later, but I still took notes. So thank you.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
All right, guys.
We'll see you next week, folks. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.